from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. A ruling this week by a Sacramento judge once again cast doubt on the future of high-speed rail in California. We'll take up the ruling and what it means in our first half hour. And then at 9:30, some 18 million Americans are affected by depression, and a new study suggests a way forward: sleep. The study found that treating insomnia improves symptoms of depression in nearly 90% of the patients studied. We'll learn more about that study and how it may revolutionize the treatment of depression in our second half hour. The latest on high-speed rail, and then the latest on treating depression, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. The long, slow journey known as bringing high-speed rail to California was flagged down for another whistle stop this week. On Monday, Sacramento Superior Court Judge Michael Kenney ruled that the High-Speed Rail Authority could not sell $8 billion in bonds and would have to redo its funding plan. And so in our first half hour this morning, we want to examine why the judge ruled as he did and what it means for the future of high-speed rail in California. Joining us to do that, Dan Richard, he's the chair of California's High-Speed Rail Authority Board. Mr. Richard, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. Joining us, too, is Judge Quentin Kopp. He was a member of the California High-Speed Rail Authority from August of 2006 till March of 2011, also chaired it for 2 years. He's also a former State Senate Transportation Committee chair and a former San Francisco Board of Supervisors member. Judge Kopp, good morning. Happy to have you here.
Good morning.
And Juliet Williams joins us as well, a reporter covering the state capitol for the Associated Press and covered this story this week. Juliet, good morning, too.
Good morning.
So, Juliet, start us out. This is a two-part ruling from the judge that they have to redo the funding plan, and there's also a rejection of the request to sell bonds. Starting with the order that they have to redo the funding plan, explain what the judge ruled and why.
Sure. Well, the judge had ruled in this lawsuit filed by some Kings County residents and farmers earlier this year. He had said that the funding plan that the board had submitted in 2011 did not comply with Proposition 1A, the 2008 ballot measure that voters approved $10 billion in bonds for building rail. He said that that it no longer met the terms that had been promised in there, in that it didn't provide, it didn't explain where all the funding would come from for the entire first leg, and it didn't have the environmental clearances at that point that were needed. And so this week what he did is order them to redo the funding plan, to write a new one, essentially.
And Dan Richard, as chair of the High Speed Rail Authority Board, how big a setback is that for you? What do you do next?
Well, I won't say that this was the ruling that we were hoping to get, but on the other hand, I think that the claims that it was a major setback are wildly overstated. One thing that's really important to understand, picking up on what Julia just said, as she pointed out, that this was a funding plan that was submitted in November 2011. Now, Governor Brown came in at the beginning of 2011. I was appointed three-quarters of the way through the year. This was the plan that was tied to the older business plan of the High-Speed Rail Authority. And since that time, we had dramatically upgraded the plan, changed it, and done a number of things that I think fundamentally address some of the concerns that the judge had. We'll see as we go forward. But my colleagues and I are getting together next week for the High-Speed Rail Authority meeting, and I suspect that after that we'll be able to lay out for the public what our course is going to be. But we think that a number of these issues can be addressed and addressed in a fairly straightforward way.
It sounds like you're saying that the judge ruled on yesterday's news. Is that right?
Not. I don't want to diminish it. It's not precisely that, but what the judge basically found wanting was a funding plan attached to an older business plan. And I'm saying that a lot of the changes that we've made since then already go down the road towards addressing some of the issues that the judge has raised.
And give us some idea of what those issues are that you feel you now can address. How are you going to come up with a funding plan? What are some of the elements to it that would take care of some of the judge's concerns?
Well, my problem at this point is, until I have an opportunity to confer with my colleagues, I don't want to get too far out in front of that. But let me just say that when we revised our business plan in the spring of 2012, a lot of the things we did with the high-speed rail program, I think, addressed a number of key concerns. For one thing, we really changed the plan so that instead of it being a standalone system that really wasn't connected to anything else, that high-speed rail is now seen as an integral part of the state's rail transportation network. We are working with the people like Caltrain to help provide for the electrification of Caltrain, to do an early investment there, because we're going to use that corridor coming up from San Jose to San Francisco. We're going to have connections to Amtrak. We're going to have a whole bunch of other things that make it more of an integrated network system. And I think that that's going to be at the heart of some of the things that we'll be addressing as we move forward.
Dan Richard, the chair of California's High-Speed Rail Authority Board. Quentin Kopp joins us as well, former member of that board, now has real concerns about the future of high-speed rail. Judge Kopp, you heard Dan Richard just say that they're going to be able to address some of these concerns, and some of that is by making it a more integrated system. But that's part of your concern, is it not, that it's no longer as pure a high-speed rail plan as it was initially envisioned?
It's a cover-up. It's not high-speed rail. In the vernacular, what they've done, starting in November 2011, continuing in April 2012, adopt a plan which rips off high-speed rail bond proceeds, if those bonds are ever allowed to be sold, and gives them away to conventional rail, commuter rail. $1 billion, more or less, Northern California for this Caltrain system. $1 billion, more or less, when you give to Northern California, you got to equal it with Southern California for the Metrolink system in the L.A. business. This ruling is a major setback. They knew it was coming as of late August when the first part of the ruling occurred. There's a second part of the case, which will probably go to trial in the spring.
Before we get to that,
which involves more violations of the bond measure. One more point. This wasn't tied to any old plan. Was high-speed rail. This isn't high-speed rail. It's something else.
But let me ask you about that, because it sounds like you're saying essentially the High-Speed Rail Authority, as a way to get where they want to go, sort of is handing off money to whether it's Caltrain or others to make this system work. Couldn't you argue, though, Judge Kopp, that that's simply a means to an end? They're figuring out a way to get where they want to go. And if that involves electrifying track for Caltrain, then it involves electrifying track for Caltrain.
Go back to the voters. Tell the voters that's what you're going to do with their money, their tax money, which they not only have to repay to the bond buyers, but repay it with the interest. Be honest.
Dan Richard, come back on that point. Judge Kopp is saying, you heard what he said. He's saying if you're going to change the rules, then you got to go back to the voters.
I've heard it for a year and a half since he called me at home in the about a year ago and started complaining about this. And at the time I asked him if he'd read the plan, which he had not. I don't think he's read it yet. The fact of the matter is that the voters voted $9 billion to support a system that would convey them from Los Angeles to San Francisco, not just San Francisco, but the Transbay Terminal, designed to achieve speeds of 200 miles an hour, electrified, and be able to do that in 2 hours and 40 minutes. That is exactly what we are building. The fact that we would use the Caltrain tracks to come up the peninsula from San Jose to San Francisco is immaterial to whether or not we can achieve the times that we need to achieve. And this goes back to some historic fights that people have had that, frankly, none of the voters are interested in. The fact of the matter is that what Judge Kopp wanted to do was build four brand-new tracks from San Jose to San Francisco at an incremental cost of $20 billion, where no one, and I mean no one, on the peninsula supported that approach. It just wasn't going to happen. So the only way we're going to have high-speed rail is to work in concert with other agencies. And I just absolutely disagree with the judge. He needs to sit down and read the plan. It provides that we are building a system in stages, which is appropriate and makes sense, that is going to deliver exactly what the voters asked for, and nothing that we have done at the High Speed Rail Authority. You can't point to one decision that in any way forecloses the high-speed rail system that's going to convey people in 2 hours and 40 minutes from downtown to downtown. It's simply not correct.
Before, Judge Kopp, I get your response to that, let me ask Juliet Williams if she can sort of weigh in on this in terms of what the ballot measure actually said. Is there, within the ballot measure itself, Juliet, does it specify how the goal is to be achieved? Dan Richard is making the argument that the goal is still there. We're going by a different means. Judge Kopp is saying that different means changes what the voters approved. How specific was the ballot measure 1A back in 2008? Does it specify the means to the end?
Well, it certainly was for a high-speed train network, which I think the authority would argue that they still will build. I think one of the key questions about the ballot measure and whether they'll be able to fulfill it is this issue of will it really be able to get passengers between San Francisco and Los Angeles in 2 hours and 40 minutes? Opponents who disagree with this blended plan say that that's not possible because the trains will have to slow down so much in the major cities that it won't get there in that time. I mean, unfortunately for the average voter looking back on their vote, it's hard to know who to believe. It's hard to know whether that will in fact be possible.
And Judge Kopp, is it your concern that not only is this a sort of subterfuge in your judgment from what was originally approved, but that they won't be able to achieve the goal, that they won't be able to get there in 2 hours and 40 minutes?
There's no way they can get there in 2 hours, 40 minutes. The ballot measure prohibits any taxpayer operating subsidies. There's no way they can run more than two, they claim four trains an hour, sharing track with commute systems. High-speed rail operates only on dedicated tracks. I wasn't trying to build four new tracks. The plan is two new tracks. And they just gave in to demagogic political pressure from people in Atherton, Menlo Park, Palo Alto, who didn't want another 50 feet of right-of-way taken. So they come up with this, excuse the word, bastardized version of it and try to peddle it to a court of law. They've lost. They're going to lose again in the spring. If that's what they want to do, 2014 is a general election year. Put it back on the ballot.
Before we get to the next election on this, let's hear from our listeners as well. 866-733-6786 is our number. If you'd like to weigh in on your thoughts on the future of high-speed rail in California, you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website as well. 866-733-6786. Let me ask Dan Richard another part of the judge's ruling, which is whether or not you really have the money together that is going to be necessary to do this. There seems to be a dispute over whether or not you have to have the money to just build this first 30-mile leg or whether or not you need the money to do 300 of that. What's the argument on that? It does seem a little odd that you could move forward with only enough money guaranteed to build 30 miles of rail.
Well, first of all, we have enough money to build 130 miles of rail because we have a legislative appropriation for $2.7 billion of bond money and for $3.3 billion of federal money. The federal money is tied to the bond money, and those dollars are there. It's a question of when we can access the bond money. It gets into a lot of technicalities about the Bond Act, but basically what you need is you need to have the dollars in hand and the environmental approvals to build a usable segment, whatever that usable segment is. No one anticipated that the voters are going to wake up one morning and find a 520-mile train system all unwrapped under the tree like a Christmas present. It's going to be built in stages. It's allowed to be built in stages. And that is exactly what we're doing. And, you know, despite all the bluster that you've heard, the fact of the matter is that what we are building in stages is precisely what the voters asked for. A voter who is riding on a high-speed rail train is going to have no idea whether or not their train is sharing those tracks with Caltrain or not. What they care about is getting from downtown to downtown in the requisite time. And let me point out that, you know, it's about 55 miles from San Francisco to San Jose. You only have to average 110 miles an hour on that segment in order to do that in the 30-minute time frame that's in the ballot measure. So, you know, Judge Kopp is just wrong on this. He's just completely wrong on the facts. He's wrong on the law, and he has been for the year and a half that he's been raising it. My real concern at this point is moving forward And we believe that we have a number of different ways to satisfy the judge's concerns. We believe that we're going to do that. And frankly, you know, if the judge had wanted to stop this project, he would have. He didn't do what the plaintiffs wanted, which was stop the project. The plaintiffs asked him to rescind the contracts we've issued. He declined to do that. He denied their request to stop us from using federal funds. The judge wants us to dot the I's and cross the T's, and that's exactly what we're going to do. And I'm confident that as we do that, we'll be able to move forward.
Judge Kopp.
The judge didn't stop you from spending money because you're spending federal money. And who knows how financially responsible the Fed bureaucracy is. Maybe they'll let you go ahead and spend it, but there's a limit to that. They can't spend more than 50% of the total cost from federal money.
But it's true
what they're
that
talking
they...
about is an initial operating section, which is something along the lines of $30 billion, $31 billion. That's what the Sacramento Superior Court found had no financial plan that could be authenticated as real.
But it's also true that the judge, as Dan Richards suggests, didn't sort of put the kibosh on the whole plan.
No, because they're spending federal money. He has no jurisdiction over federal money.
He
didn't make them set aside this construction contract they awarded on a no-bid basis to this Tudor Perini, which has a well-known record of cost overruns.
Before we get too deep into the specifics, Dan Richard, a quick response, then I'm going to take some calls.
I don't understand this notion of a no-bid contract. We had five international companies bidding for this. Look, you know, Judge Kopp and I worked together on a number of issues, like BART to San Francisco Airport, the Capital Corridor train. I've known him for 20 years. We've worked well together on a number of issues. We fundamentally disagree about this, and here's the difference. When we came in, this program was in shambles. It was not going to be built. And while we've had our bumps in the road, as all projects do, the organization is stronger, the plan is stronger, our alliances with local transit districts, which were non-existent before, are now very vibrant and strong, and this is an important transformative project for the state, and it's going to be built.
Let's hear what our callers think. Tim in Cupertino. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, my question is for everyone that's involved, is how come we, as a nation, we seem to always want to build things on our own? How come we didn't rely on information from other countries that have already been doing this for decades? Why is it we had to strike out and do it ourselves and not kind of ask them for help?
Tim, thanks for the call. Juliet Williams, you want to respond to that? How much has this plan been modeled, if at all, after other high-speed rail plans in other locales?
Sure. I think that the Rail Authority would certainly argue that they are taking all of those best practices into consideration. Their business plan, whether you like it or not, it relies a lot on comparing the modeling that's been done in Japan and in China and all of the European high-speed rail systems. And the bidding there were, as Dan Richards said, there were five bids that came in for the $1 billion contract for the first 30 miles. And some of those were international firms. I believe one was from Spain. So I think they would say that they're taking those best ideas, but that if we're spending this much public money, that it's important that there still be state oversight.
Michael in Oakland is next. Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Do you know what would the cost of a round-trip ticket be? From where would it disembark? Like, from, would you have to go to San Francisco to catch the train? I live in the East Bay.
Dan Richard?
The way that we've modeled this is we want to be competitive with the airlines. So our business plan and all our ridership forecasts are predicated on the notion that we would be about 85% of a discounted ticket for the airlines between San Francisco and L.A. So if you look at today, Southwest ticket, let's say average discounted ticket around $100, we anticipate our fare would be about $83. The train would originate in downtown San Francisco at the Transbay Terminal, but it would stop in San Jose. BART is going to connect to San Jose. So from the East Bay, which is where I live, you could either go across and get it in San Francisco, you could pick it up in San Jose. You know, ultimately, as the system is built out in future decades, we hope that there are other connections. But I think that addresses the caller's question.
Michael, thanks for the call. Judge Kopp, do you believe that that pricing structure is appropriate and accurate for what those costs will actually be to consumers?
I don't know. The prices have been changed and will be changed on a continuing basis. And who knows what a cost to L.A. will be. You'll get on in San Francisco. You'll have to get off in San Jose, get on another true high-speed rail train, hypothetically, go over the Pacheco Pass, down the valley, get off at Sylmar in L.A. County, get on Metrolink, the commute train. You're going to do that in 2 hours, 40 minutes?
Dan Richard.
You know, David, this is where my friend Judge Kopp and I don't know where he got this notion. I heard he's been telling people this. We're building a one-seat ride, and he's been out telling people that we're going to have people change trains. It's just simply not true. As we build the system out, if we build the first leg from the Valley to Palmdale, yeah, you'll get off and you'll get on a Metrolink train, and you'll start immediately writing your legislators asking why we're not finishing high-speed rail all the way into L.A. But the system we're building will be a one-seat ride at high speeds all the way from San Francisco to downtown L.A. and on to Anaheim. That's what we're building. This notion, the judge has been running around saying this, that people are going to have to change trains, it's simply not true.
It's in your business plan. I'm going to keep running around, to use your phrase, saying it, because there's not one but two statutes enacted by the legislature and the governor which prohibit any more than two tracks on the peninsula. High-speed rail, as you know, if you've studied any of the European models or Asian models, has to run on dedicated tracks. You can't do it. Back to the voters. Be honest with them.
We just have a minute or two left, so let me ask you each this. First, Juliette Williams, where are the prospects now as you read this politically? Gavin Newsom said some things yesterday that made it sound like he said we're losing public opinion, quote unquote. Do you sense that the political will is lessening to make this project happen?
I think there's certainly a lot of uncertainty in the public. However, Jerry Brown is still the governor for now, and it appears likely that he'll run again next year, and he is a very strong supporter of this project, as is the state legislature, which right now is controlled by Democrats. So I don't foresee in the short term any change in their commitment to the project. I think depending on how long this rewrite takes of the business plan and whether there are further protracted legal arguments that delay this longer, some of those minds could change.
And Dan Richard, briefly, you're convinced it's going to be built?
I am. And just to pick up on Juliette's point, in addition to the people she mentioned, you can add the supporters of California's high-speed rail, the President of the United States, the Secretary of Transportation, our entire Democratic congressional delegation, the mayors of all our major cities, the Chambers of Commerce, the Bay Area Council of all of our major cities, the mayors of Fresno and Palmdale.
And I'm going to have to ask you to hold your list of endorsements with that and let Quentin Kopp have a last quick word.
Well, the fact of the matter is the Superior Court decision requires a redoing of the financial plan, which isn't just that short part from Merced to Fresno, but it's all the way down the valley to Bakersfield and beyond, and that's about $30, $31 billion.
Do you think it's not going to happen? Sorry, we have to close. But
it's not going to happen this way unless they go back to voters and say it isn't really high-speed rail, but we want to electrify commuter systems because that's all they're doing.
We'll leave it there for now, and we'll come back and deal with this more in the future. This is Forum on KQED.